Accession number 12710, Mr. John Avery, final reel 26.
Mr. J. Avery, reel 26. You came back to England from Norway, Mr. Avery. What happened next?
Yeah, I got on the train and up to York for the demobbed. But when we got so far along the ring, we couldn't get demobbed at York. So the train carried on to Carlisle for the night. We got up at Carlisle at night time, I don't know what time it was, night it was getting on. They just shoved us in some more army bunks, army boots for the night. A mess was like, you know, no flesh at all, like, you know, cut a wound. As you can understand, they weren't expecting. No way. Gets up early in the morning, back on a train, took us to Edinburgh. To we would call it Eton Radial Barracks, or Eton Radial Barracks, wasn't it? Thing there, the demob thing there in the barracks there.
What was the demob process? What did they do to you going through the demob situation?
Well, you went through, why did this, why did that? No, just sign me up. This is a lot, I mean, it's a lot of like. Like yourself, you should have said, you know, wound, yeah, injuries and all that. But you know, that place, say, out, you give it all these bundles of paper, sign it, and you just grab it and go down and get measured up for it. So went through for so, put shoes and shirts and that, this raincoat. Couldn't get a suit. So I said, measure it, and as soon as it went on, like, you know, and straight out.
Did they send a suit on?
Aye. Sent us a suit on. When I looked at it, I said I wouldn't give it the dog to wear. So I gets the doggets, you know, then you'll see measure, oh, the bloke, oh, you have to measure me for me, so. Then before the war, he used to come to our office. I said, "Will you measure me up?" He said, "Look at this." He said, "What's that?" I said, "That's the demob." So it's going back as fast as it come. So part of you put the measurements, notes, and that in the thing, printed in an envelope, like, you know, sent it back. I waited another fortnight. I got this blue print strip. The ones that the were print blue print strip. But it was a better fit and a decent fit too. There was like a, I think it come out of the workhouse at Bishop there, you know, workhouse shelter. I said, I wouldn't have worn it. If I couldn't get another, I wouldn't have never worn it.
Had you a medical when you were finished with the army? Did they give you a final medical?
No. Didn't know medical at all.
What about pays and emoluments and things like that?
Oh, it all come together. They said you've got all the papers and you all come together and all that.
And was that quite a sum of money?
Because that's what you're talking about, did. Qatar. Man doing 7 years, you know, for Qatar. This is where you talk about man fighting for his country. Everybody gives back. Yes, nothing. I just, well, to be honest, I was just reading the paper there about it. This morning there, about a corporal being in an accident. Supposed to have been drunk. He's cleared the charge. But yet the army flow still had him guilty. discharge him out of the army, give him £175. Really? Sure, mate. Not worth it. It's not right. But if it was a war broken out next week, you'd want him to go back and fight, wouldn't it? That's all we've got. And yet you got in a chit. As I say, I talk about your pay. What a great lot. I was even paying income tax then on my pay.
Well, when you got home, your family was still there.
Yes, all right.
What did you do then, coming out of the army? What were you planning to do, or did you do?
Well, what I planned to do, be honest and truthful, is the biggest sum of money I'd got, I was going to get as drunk as as long as it lasts. And then have a good holiday sort of thing, a year's holiday, sort of, after that. That was like my intention to have.
And did you do that?
I did. You're only allowed £3 a day. Didn't last long. I got more for my grandmother. I did a cross there.
So, did you look for a job then? Was a job easy to get?
Oh, I got a job. Didn't want to go to. I want to go to. A mate of mine, I used to go, and he said, "Are you going?" I said, "I didn't want to really go anywhere." Like, you know. But I went. I tell you, where was that? Where was that now? Switched to a window. I know I did a bit of. We're talking about the first job. I think the first job was the open caster, Brussels. They were getting a lot of money, I think. Or was it after my quite job? After that, I went to West Dunwich, building them kilns in West Dunwich. I think it was at Brussels first. Because there was a lot of money made out of the open caster.
You continued your connection with the regiment, did you?
Oh, I always did. There's a photograph of on there. Have you seen it? No, just get up and take that.
That contact that with the regiment has continued till today.
Aye.
With the Regimental Association.
Association. Mm-hmm.
And you attend the various reunions.
Reunions.
Looking back on your army career, which was quite a long one, what memories have you of any person who you liked being in battle with, you could rely on? Is there anyone in particular that you felt was a good man to be with?
My mate, like Bobby Vandenberg, we were all mates together. You could take you could trust Jimmy Cogg, you could trust Chucky German. Them lads was with you all the time. You could depend upon them. If they saw you in trouble, or you saw them in trouble, you could depend, you would get it out, or do what they could. We always did a lot of things together, like, you know. We got split up as a platoon. We got split into different platoons. We still kept the same thing going. If we could help each other, we would help each other. In my point of view, there was no NCO, senior NCOs or officers ever, like, you know, come to say, help me along. They always seem to, we always seem to help ourselves along. We did our own thing. Not just officers. We knew that the officers said the Germans was coming here, so and so on. We knew all that. That was anybody's guesses. So we used to do our own thing. But as lads like that, them was the lads, you think. Jackie German, Jimmy Coughlin, and all them lads, like, you know.
Of that group, did you lose any of those killed in action?
No, not really. There's only one lad that did leave us, but he got shifted out quite a while before. I think it was a lad called, what's his name now? He got killed with Titchy Dorton and then with Carriers.
What's your worst memory? What was the worst occasion you feel that you had in the war?
First.
The worst memory, your worst action, your worst involvement.
The worst involvement was Alamein and Maris and them places. They were rough all over that way.
Was there any...
They were the most roughest of the lot. Like in action, like, you know, it was ding dong then. I mean, you cannot point specifically say this bit or that bit. They all were meant them all together, were all woof.
Were there any occasions when you felt that the higher people, the higher ranks, were letting you down?
Oh.
Or had let you down?
Well, certainly. Some of the lads used to say, some of them higher rank officers couldn't look after the kindergarten sort of stuff. Like, you know, used to say, couldn't drive safe sort of stuff.
What level of rank would you put these people at, as against the officers who were much closer to you? You know, you're talking about officers who weren't much good. At what level, at what ranking were these officers?
Well, what ranking some of them would be, colonels, you know that. You know the one army, he's a W.
This is Bernard Castle.
Mm. And the only senior man in that respect was, as I always, I don't know if I'm ever done telling you, was Colonel Batty.
Battiscombe.
He was a man you could trust to say anything. I was a private mate, this sergeant, like, I was in charge, his second command. And he says to me, he says, you were an idiot, didn't you? I says, oh, yeah. And I studied him again. And he used to say, like, I told him, you complained. Right? Everybody felt I was going back into Nickingham. So I says, accept my appointment. I says, good deal. I says, I've got no other choice. He says, 7 days, see me. Because when I come back, said, everybody thought it was the Williams. Good thing.
The officers that were closer to you, the fighting officers, the lieutenants and captains that were just in charge
Captain
of your units.
George, he was a grand fella. He'd share anything with you. There was that Captain Jackson and Pringle and them. They were all good officers. I'm forgetting the names now. There was a one from Jarrah there. He was a good. Rough, like, you know, just like yourself, like, you know. And then, as I say, they were all good officers.
What do you look for in a good officer? What would you be looking for?
A man, it tells you you've done wrong, you know you've done wrong, like, you know. And he tells you straight away, you know nothing about the bush. But if you're telling the truth, he'll believe you. You're not, go on, say you're guilty and all this. He'll say that if you've told the truth, he'll say you would get off. He wouldn't mess about with you. Men like that, the adjutant, Major Wilmot, and one or two good ones like that, as I say, they would they'd put you in the nick and come through the night at night time, stick a bottle of beer underneath the tent. Tashy Overton, Major Overton, another one. Dapper little Tashy man, dapper little fellow. And you say, they weren't like that. They just come and shove a bottle of beer in Charlie. I just had this letter, the letter I was telling my man, Bobby, who was in Iraq, up in Mosul, and Shepherd. He left us there, went to the Iraqi rebels. We got sick with being digging trenches and wondering and how another, and got sick and we just laid in bed in the afternoon. We all laid together. And they made bubble laid and not keep warm, doubled up there, you know. The bricks, the blanks, and there you keep. And we just laid in this tent and he was shouting, "Come on, get outside." That's Jimmy about this. "No way." He was joking or something. In the tent, me and Bob's first name, yeah, next to him, long. He grabs hold of the blanks and pulls them off. No, I just feel it. And he got Bob's feathers over. He says, "You want us outside?" He says, "You want all our equipment outside?" He says, "All right." So he gets his equipment. He's starting to raise them all outside. Right. But he says, get along. So I don't know, what's the matter? Get along, to lay it down. He says, "There's my equipment, mine's out. Get to the cell." Nobody locked it. And he cut off. Sergeant Major McMorney come down. Oh, he gets up and he gets out. Lines up. And he's shouting the ball about this and that. And just start to laugh. We just start to laugh. They broke, he threw a stick down and then walked off. "Oh, you're with Jimmy Cog." Walked off. He wore one stick book about it. Yeah. That was Jimmy McMahon. That's how the Major was. I got put on, Bobby got put in the nick then that day. Well, just getting fed. He didn't want to come out. "No," he said, "I'm not going to stop and leave." Nick. I'm the best place in the world, Nick. Didn't know this. Must have heard it. Tell you to do with it.
What was the best aspects of army life for you? What was the best aspects of army life for you?
Oh, it's like when we was doing a proper guard, like, you know, bugling, and or if we were doing it by rifle and bayonet, like, you know, because we were always thought we were, there were 16 of us in the bugle, and we could all smart as a carrot, like, you know, on the thing. They were all about the same height. But, you know, Jimmy and me, Bobby Van, all them were all about the same height, you know. Jimmy Singlewood were all about all the same height, you know. We were on a guard. The old drill was a lot of sergeant majors in the battalion was great. It was that good. We're just buglers, they say.
When you came out and you were demobbed, did you find in any way that some men who were young enough to be in the army, never ever been in, were they in a better position than you financially? Did you resent that kind of thing?
Quite certainly. But you've got a lot of them that don't. There's a down there thing, one got there, Wilkinson. that what he had, a roofing and sand and cement and one thing, no business going. He had that gun the time we got out. He was established, we weren't, we were to fight our way. It was a conscientious objector.
What were your feelings to that kind of person?
Word to me, there you are. The feeling, my feelings was, should have dragged them there. But there you are. Get the load of just what the country is like, just the load of them people's thing. It's just like now, the Sikhs. They give the Sikhs that little bit, I think, no almost, just the way the term got away with. Now what they want to do, wasn't it? I mean, you go back there to India or around about there and you were in the same place. You didn't do what they said. You know where you go. Without any questions asked. You wouldn't have said what he said. But we form a parliament.
Do you think that many of the things you were fighting for just haven't happened since the war ended?
Well, be honest and truthful. Lads that got killed in the 1939-40, 45, fought for a wasted effort. To me, a wasted effort. The two defeated countries, Germany and Japan, now rules the roost. So, who's won the war? All these big shots up in London, these so-called politicians who won nothing. Not a thing. Man come out there for nothing. Went fought for nothing. And today, I'm not a communist and out like that. But if Hitler had gotten, they could have made no difference to such as us. The only people that was going to hurt were such as them with all the money and the power and all that. They were the people that's going to get hurt, which is happening when the Falklands, a war should never have been fought. Even the Gulf War. And there's another thing about your Americans. You couldn't trust them. They would show that if anything had moved. Even the old men would show up. They didn't. To me, there weren't no discipline about them. I mean, the Irish knew that as the Falklands War and the Gulf War was a farce to me. A real farce. Just to get politicians' big names.
Do you think the soldiers of today are as tough and as hard and as good as you were?
No. No, be honest and truthful, no. Because they get it too easy. They got it too easy. And I mean, the lads in our thing, we weren't regular soldiers. We were just here, and lads dragged off the street. Dragged off the street. Some of them didn't know right where the rifle shot from. But they fought like with some of these and professional soldiers. You know. I mean, see, well, now you've got to have O levels and A levels to get into army. Well, that gets you a lot. That can answer a bullet, can't it? Eh? It tells me a lot, the ideas. You've got O level. You can't kill me, you've got to go.